welcome to Jason and Ashley's Excellent Adventures. I'm Jason.
I'm Ashley.
And this is the podcast where we get a little personal. And you might notice it sounds a little different. Well, you know, that's because I think we told you in the last episode that we had to send off the Rode soundboard off to get repaired. It apparently is on its way back to us thanks to our friends at UPS. We don't have any friends at UPS, but I wish we did. But, you know, we didn't want to wait. We wanted to record a couple more of those, and that has led to an old favorite series of ours. If you ever listen to Jason and Ashley's, you know we like to record in the car.
Where are we going, Jason?
Do we want to tell them where we're going?
I mean, we can tell them, like, vaguely what we're going to do.
We're going to the drive-in.
Yeah.
We're going to see a movie
tonight.
Because it's one of the, it's a socially distanced way that you can see a movie, and we're going to go see a couple award-winning movies. We won't tell you what the movies are, because they'll date this podcast like
they're
crazy.
They're also award-nominated, and they're not award-winning yet.
I'm putting it out into the future. I'm saying when, not if, Ashley.
Okay. I mean, I would be cool with that.
But
it would both be legendary.
Long-time listeners of Jason and Ashley's Excellent Adventures, like, they know that this is where things get crazy. Like, because we don't like to just sit and listen to music or listen to other podcasts. We like to record podcasts on the road.
That's true.
Or in the West, as some might say.
And I mean, we're about as west as you can go besides Hawaii, so.
I mean, we're about maybe 16 miles from the ocean.
We could walk to the ocean if we're feeling heroic.
I mean, if we wanted to make it a long walk, yes, we could. But yeah, we're about 16 miles from the ocean, the Pacific Ocean, the West Ocean, as people in America would call it. The East Ocean.
I don't think anyone calls it that.
East Ocean, as people would call it in Asia. The East Ocean.
Can you name all the oceans?
I believe so.
Do it.
I don't. Why are you putting me on the spot?
I just want to see if you could do
no,
it.
No, I don't want to.
There's only like
the
four
listeners
or
don't
five.
Need it. See, now you got me. Like, now that I'm worried I'm going to forget one, and now I absolutely refuse.
Fine.
That I completely walk out of this.
In 2021, please request a Jason and Ashley's Adventures on the ocean.
No. I do know them all. Okay. What are we talking about, Ashley? You're the one that leads that. What are we talking about? I said I gave you a great segue. You threw it away.
You did not. So today we are being prompted by another great listener, by Rick with no last name. So I'm assuming that he's that scientist from Mike McMahon's cartoon.
He's like Cher.
Sure.
You think he's Rick from Rick and Morty?
I guess. I don't know anything about Rick from Rick
and Morty. I would love if he was one of our patrons. I would love that.
And he says, I'd like to hear an episode about the best Westerns. And then there's a second part of that, but we're saving that for another episode. So best Westerns.
Oh, he asked a double question.
/ why we love Westerns.
Oh, okay.
Now, this is largely, I think, going to be a Jason answer. Because Jason is more passionate about the genre than I am. I like Westerns and everything, but I think Jason's going to have more interesting answers this time around.
Well, you
around.
Definitely need to talk here, I'll tell you that.
Yeah. Okay. But I just think you're going to have a wider breadth of knowledge than I.
Well, you're goddamn right.
Okay,
because I'm a rootin' tootin' son of a gun who loves the West.
Rootinist, tootinist, shootinist? Isn't that what Yosemite Sam says?
I don't need to rhyme all my ways. You hear me?
Sure.
All right. How are we going to start this off?
Why do you love Westerns, Jason?
So I love Westerns because I saw a lot of them when I was a kid. And I've told the story probably several times with Jason Ashley's, but it's always a nice way to recount it. I saw a lot of weird television shows and weird movies, and I think movies that people growing up in the 90s would not have seen because I lived in a very poor agricultural area. And so I didn't have cable. So I didn't get to, like, really pick and choose what I watched. I literally turned on the TV, had four channels, that's it.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the stations would always do this every weekend. They'd do a Saturday movie and they'd do a Sunday movie. It was always in the afternoon. It was usually around 2 or 3 o'clock. And it was always sponsored by somebody. So it was, like, sort of like an infomercial movie.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the time it was by this company called Derailed Commodity, who would sell window siding and house siding in between the commercials. And again, I've told this story before, but I love it. It was a guy in a suit, and he would just be like, my friends, you got to get your house sided, and you got to get that protection from the water here, and I'm going to show you how to get I'll pick up a hammer here. Here's this piece of siding. Whack! And he'd hit it. And it would, like, dent. And he's like, see, that's normal siding. I'm going to show you Derailed Commodity siding. And he hit the hammer, and, like, nothing would happen. He'd just keep hitting with the hammer. He's like, all right, now back to the movie. Now the phone, the number is on the screen. If you like, you need some siding, enjoy the movie, folks.
I would also like to say, listeners, wherever you're listening to this, at your home, at your work, on a train, in a public space, please stop and applaud for Mr. Jason Inman, who just merged from behind a car who was going walkabout all over the lane in front of us. Very excellently done, Jason.
Okay. Yes, podcasting, a generally visual medium.
Yeah. I just think you deserve kudos for that excellent maneuver.
Oh, thank you. So
thanks to Siding Guy, you have seen a lot of Westerns.
Yeah, so they like would play all kinds of like samurai movies, kung fu movies, foreign movies, because I think the guy just bought up whatever movie he could afford, and he didn't give a damn.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And now I would say about 55% or 60% of them were Westerns. Mm-hmm. So I got to see a lot of Westerns, and I got to see the good Westerns, the bad Westerns, the really cheap looking Westerns. I saw all of them, and I sort of just, they become a comfort food. And, but I also believe that, like, just like comic books, mm-hmm, and superheroes, the Western is a uniquely American medium. It is very American because the Wild West is the American West. It is in no other location of the world. And when you tell stories about that, that is specifically the place of the world. You are talking about the Western United States. That is the Wild West. And that specific period of time, which I would brand as anywhere between 1840 to 1910. And the reason why I put it in 1910 is because I think, like, Butch Cassidy and Sundance Kid takes place at the beginning of a very famous Western at the beginning of the 20th century.
Mm-hmm.
The modern world kills the Western.
I would have put it later than 1910.
No. I the reason why I say 1910 is because by 1910, most of the major modern railroads,
mm-hmm,
were constructed.
Mm.
And so fences were being built, cities were made. All the railroad towns existed in 1910. I also believe that World War One is the big, like, done. Like,
yes,
that,
because World War One, for a lot of people, particularly in England, it sort of, I think, begins with the Industrial Revolution, but I think in North America, that marks a lot of industrialization and modernization for the 20th century, starts around the mid-1910s.
Well, a lot of people don't know that around the 1910s, before World War One, there were a lot of open range fights.
What does that mean?
Okay, so that is like, you know, back in the Old West, when you think about it, when you're grazing cattle or grazing, mm-hmm, animals, sheep, you know, pigs, whatever you want to do it, you didn't have fences.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't have barbed wire.
Mm-hmm.
You kind of just let your animals roam, and your animals would come back to your farm or your house.
Yeah,
because
that's where the food was.
Because that's where they knew where the food,
yeah,
was. But they would go grazing, right? And sometimes every once in a while, you, as a farmer, you'd have to get on your horse and be like, well, where the hell did the herd go?
Yeah.
And, you know, and sometimes, like, flooding would stop them. But it became a thing in the early 20th century, and I've always heard them called open range fights, mm-hmm, where the ranchers... Now, the ranchers were considered the ones that would build fences and fence the animals
in. Oh, we watched a Kevin Costner movie about that.
Called Open Range.
Yeah, that's right.
And I think that movie took place in, like, 1895?
Don't remember. I'm sorry. I'm not going to look it up.
It's the late 19th century.
Yeah, yeah.
So the ranchers were the ones that put up the fences, and the grazers were the ones that just let their animals roam. And it became a fight until eventually, you know, the ranchers won because they had more money. Because they, you know how they, you know how they, you know they had more money?
Because they won.
No, because they could afford to build fence.
Oh, that's fair.
Barbed wire is expensive, Ashley. And barbed wire.
Sure. I have no idea.
You pay for barbed wire by the foot.
Mm.
So think about it. Like, of course a rancher has more money because he bought all the materials to make the fence.
Sure, that's very fair.
You know, the grazer doesn't have that money. That's why they didn't build the fence.
Uh-huh.
You know?
I just wanted to go over that in case anyone was unfamiliar with the term. That's
sure,
all.
Sure, sure, sure. But you want to know actually what the real definition of a Western story is?
Clint Eastwood's in it.
No. I actually looked this up. When I was writing my pilot a couple years ago, The Weird West, it is a story that takes place in the West. of the United States. That's it.
Wow.
So you,
specific.
Yeah, so you could...
So Vertigo is a Western. Got it.
Kind of, yeah.
San Francisco's West.
Yes. I mean, yeah, fair.
I'm just being facetious.
No, no, no. Yeah,
course,
so you could make a modern movie with modern tropes, you could call it a Western.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it would count. Like, Justified is definitely a Western, although it takes place in Kentucky, which is not the West. So actually, Justified, not a Western. Sorry, everybody. Get out of here, Timmy Alma.
Hope they make you the Mandalorian.
Yeah, so where do we want to take this conversation now?
So I thought what might be fun to do is talk about some of our favorites in the Western genres. So, like, what is a favorite Western book? What is a favorite Western movie? What is a favorite Western...
There are no... I mean, I don't know Western plays.
Television show. But I just mean, like...
Green Grow the Lilacs.
We could cross... we could cross genre if we felt like it.
Oh, sure. I want you to say what your favorite Western is, or the ones I've showed you.
if it's not one of the ones I saw Westerns before you, mm-hmm. first of all.
I don't know about that.
There are a lot of Canadian Westerns because just like America, Canada was settled on the Eastern Seaboard as well.
That's fair.
So there are a lot of stories, but they tend to, that are sort of about taking the prairies or taking the West Coast, but they tend to revolve more around rivers because there's a full river passageway that leads from the East Coast of Canada to the West Coast, but it's not like cowboys as much, but it's that same sort of like ethos and explorer story.
What's the name of the passageway? I don't know if I know it.
You know what? Don't ask me that.
Oh, okay.
Because right. I don't know.
I just didn't know. I didn't know that you could actually, like, if you
but
wanted
the,
to...
It's the Fourier route. It's the fur trader route that they took, that the Hudson
sense.
Bay Company forged. Like you see in, oh my God, what's the movie where Leonardo DiCaprio fights a bear?
The Revenant.
In The Revenant, they're doing that same thing, right? They follow the fur trade out there.
Ah, so you could get in a boat around
Lake Superior?
Lake Superior, and you could go all the way to the West Coast.
You could get in a boat in the Fredericton River, which you've been to, in
yeah.
Fredericton, New
yeah,
Brunswick,
yeah.
and you could go to the Pacific Ocean.
Really?
Yes.
Wow. I didn't know that it was that complete. It's like the Mississippi,
almost.
I'm
not saying there wouldn't be some overland parts.
Oh, I'm certain
there
is.
But there are not significant overland legs, yes.
You could do most of it.
Yes, and I will have you know that my first love of Western storytelling came when I was in the first grade, and I was given a copy of Little House on the Prairie.
Oh, such a good book.
By my first grade teacher, Mr. Waring, when I graduated first grade. And I loved it, and I read the entire series. And then Jason Inman once, when we were in Kansas, took me to the Little House from Little House on the Prairie.
Wasn't it the first time we went?
I believe it was the first time.
It was the first time, yeah, yeah. And I took you, and
it
was
little.
It was actually closed off, because I think we went on a weekend.
Yeah, yeah.
And we just hopped the fence when it looked.
But I will say that I could still clear the doorway, so I guess I'm little too.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that was the thing you were like, it is so little. Yeah.
Yeah, I loved it. I loved that, and I read all the Laura Ingalls Wilder and all of the...
I read all those books in third grade.
All of the Anne of Green Gables books around the same time in
yep.
my life. I really loved those. So some of my favorite Westerns, I mean, Justified, I think, is a good modern take on the Western.
I'd love to hear a movie. Like, let's do movies first. Like, I just think I would love to hear what you think, because that is the genre. Like, movies are, like, the thing that kicked off the Western genre in terms of modern culture.
Because
Westerns were, like, Westerns, superhero movies now are the Westerns of the 1950s.
Yes,
Westerns
absolutely.
Were the dominant genre from the 50s to the 60s and about halfway into the 70s. And superhero movies are going to be that same. Like, they are the Western of now. So yeah, I'm very curious, like, do you have a Western
okay,
and
so
like, what
you,
is it?
I will give you a contemporary choice. I'll give you like a classic Western.
Sure.
And then I will give you something that I think is a Western derivative.
That's fine.
So this is a modern movie that
I said that's fine. The microphone was nowhere even close to my mouth.
We watched this movie really recently. But I think Dances with Wolves is very good.
Oh, it's so good.
And one of the things that I really like about Dances with Wolves is I really think that the casting of the Native Americans is really good. Now, this is me as a white person speaking through a white lens. I know there are, I know it's imperfect, and I know there are issues with it, but they cast some really fabulous Native American actors.
There's a famous Canadian actor in that, right?
Graham Greene.
Graham Greene. Yeah, he's really good.
I love him so very much.
And Wes Studi, the astounding Wes Studi, is of course
the handsome, iconic enemy.
He's the enemy in that movie.
And then, oh my goodness, I have to look up his name. Who plays Wind in My Hair?
Oh, I don't know.
That man is amazing. And he should have been the lead of 8,000 things. But I think he is very good.
Okay.
I also really enjoyed, I think it's called The Shootist?
The John Wayne's last film. Yes, it's called The Shootist. Yep.
I enjoyed that very much. Apparently, Wind in My Hair is a Disney song. So we're going to Google Dances with Wolves instead. So here's a movie that I really like that I definitely think counts as a Western, but doesn't have cowboys and First Nations people in
okay.
it.
Okay.
I really like The Road.
Oh, interesting.
Based on the Cormac, and it's my favorite Cormac McCarthy book, although I think the best Western book I've ever read is All the Pretty Horses by Cormac McCarthy.
Yes.
But I think that that is a very much a Western story.
Sure.
In the tradition of something, I guess, like Shane, which I've never seen.
Yeah, Shane is very quintessential. It's so funny because I think of The Road as like a post-apocalyptic kind of story.
Shout out to Rodney A. Grant, who plays Wind in His Hair and is truly the most beautiful person sure. in Dances with Wolves. So yeah, I think of The Road. I also think I would justify The Road as being a Western because people say Logan is a Western and it's very much the same story.
Very much so.
And the storytelling.
Logan is basically Shane.
I've never seen Shane, but I've seen Logan.
Yeah, Logan is it's like some slight changes, but it's basically Shane.
I've seen the end of Shane where the little boy's like yelling after him.
Well,
because
you
shared it with me.
Yeah, you asked me about the ending and like spoilers if you don't know for a movie that came out in the 60s.
50 years ago.
Shane is one of the best Westerns ever made. I cannot remember who played the lead actor and I'm kicking myself for knowing it, but I'm
do you want me to look it up?
No, I don't care.
Okay.
But the ending of Shane is that, of course, you know, the outlaw guy who has stayed with the family and has befriended the young boy who doesn't have a dad, you know, so Shane has become this young boy's father figure. In the final fight, Shane takes a bullet and he rides off, and it's a big debate, and I think this is one of the reasons why everybody remembers Shane, is that Shane rides off into the distance and the little boy goes, "Shane, come back! Shane, come back!" And there's a big debate about, does Shane survive?
Mm-hmm.
And if you watch the movie, the actor, in a brilliant move, slumps over when he gets into the distance, really giving you the idea that Shane is dead and that this man cared so much for that little boy that he didn't want that little boy to see him die in front of him. You know, which is, you know, it's problematic, but it's also like, it's a classic hero trope, right?
You
know, it's like,
you sacrifice yourself. And Logan literally does the same thing.
And Logan does the exact same thing. Now, I believe that Shane does die. That is, because it completes the arc of the movie. So there you go.
Can I add two animated movies and then I'll let you give your answer?
Well, I'm going to say that everybody, I think if you haven't seen Shane, you should definitely, you should see Shane, and don't let, just because you know the ending, it's like Citizen Kane. Like, we all know that Rosebud is a sled, but it's still a great movie.
Yes, absolutely.
Or Psycho. What are your two animated movies?
The Good Dinosaur, because it doesn't get enough credit.
It is a Western.
And it is fully a Western. It is the Westerniest soundtrack of all time.
I hope you say what I hope you're going to say next.
Well, I don't know if you're going to... I was going to say Five Will Goes West.
Yes!
Okay.
Yes! An American Tale 2, Five Will Goes West. Jimmy Stewart's final performance.
As
the sheriff.
Wiley Burp is
Wiley
his
Burp.
Name.
Yep.
I legitimately loved that movie. I didn't see the first Fievel movie until I was babysitting in like 2019.
I actually think the second one's better.
I agree. The first one made me very sad about being an immigrant.
The first one has a lot of slow parts in it. And I understand, but like, I think the music is better in the second one. The animation is better in the second
one. The music is so good in the second one.
I think the songs in the second one are so good. And I think the arc of... Fievel becoming the new sheriff is like really good.
Yeah, and then he like switches the cowboy hat to like his little poor boy cap again at the end. It's a nice little moment. Okay, so I've talked a lot, Jason, as our Western expert.
Yes.
What are some of your favorite Westerns?
Well, my favorite movie of all time is The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. And that
with
is
one of the all-time great Western songs in it as well.
Yes, Clint. Yeah, The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, of course, is the classic one where it's like wah, 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 wah.
Parodied by every cartoon you've ever seen in your life.
Fun story: when I was a little kid, I would sometimes go. My dad, in also as being a farmer, he would drive a semi truck every once in a while,
mm-hmm.
and he'd do odd jobs in the semi truck. And listening to the stuff happening over the CB radio was so interesting. I can remember very distinctly one time that we were hauling, I don't remember what we hauled to Kansas City, Missouri, but we would haul something to Kansas City, Missouri, and it would be like a quick overnighter where, like, we would drive up there the night of, and then we would sleep in the cab of the truck until it opened at 7 a.m., and then we would dump and then just go right back. And trucks would do this all the time. Like, you would just line up the semi-trucks, and there'd be, like, five or six of them. And I remember one of the times on the CB radio, Kansas City, Missouri, we entered Kansas City, and on one of the stations was, wah, 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 wah. And I remember, like, you know, 20 minutes ago, my dad would turn and say, what the hell? Like, so some trucker out there was just holding his radio to, I guess, it would have been either a cassette tape or an 8-track at that time.
Yeah.
There were no CD players in semi-trucks at that time. And this guy was, like, playing this amazing Ennio Morricone song and just like, yeah. Wah, wah,
wah, wah, wah. I mean, that song rocks.
It does rock. All the soundtracks to the Sergio Leone, The Man With No Name trilogies are amazing. They're all by Ennio Morricone. They're astounding. They're all iconic. But Good, the Bad, and the Ugly theme is the most iconic. I just think, and it's so funny, I was actually recently talking on Twitter with a screenwriter. I think his name is Tony Tost or Toast. It's T-O-S-T. And he was talking about how, like, every frame of The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly is a masterclass. And I agree. I agree because I love Westerns. Should not have a lot of dialogue. It should be about...
Well, Quentin Tarantino would disagree with you.
Well, that's Quentin Tarantino. and I love Django Unchained, by the way. I will say that.
I went more of a Hateful Eight.
I don't like Hateful Eight. But Django Unchained, I will say, is one of my more favorite Westerns, modern Westerns. I think it's so good to... because the strength of a Western is that you have the lone hero. And I think, especially in a modern context, to give that role to a black slave is genius. Genius. Because also, most Westerns are revenge quests. Most of them are. Most of them start out where it's either innocent people or town folk get taken advantage of, then a lone hero comes out of the sunset to save them all.
Also, speaking of black leads, I can't believe neither of us has mentioned Blazing Saddles yet.
Oh, Blazing Saddles is really good.
Yeah.
But the Good, the Bad, and the Ugly is... There's too many... That's the thing. There's too many good Westerns. And you shouldn't move away from the genre just because you think it's goofy and outdated. It's not. They're so strong.
I would definitely echo that. It's not at all.
But the Good, and the Bad, and the Ugly has one of the greatest sequences of all time. The Ecstasy of Gold. If you do not know what I'm talking about. But there are so many sequences... in The Good and the Bad and the Ugly that are told visually. There is just a visual and music. That's it. There is no dialogue. And film is a visual medium, not a talking medium. And that's what I love about the power and the myth of the great filmmaking trick of The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly is that every time the good is Clint Eastwood, the bad is Eli Wallach, and the ugly is Lee Van Cleef. Now, a lot of people will switch those, but that's the evilest person is the ugliest. You know, it's one of those things where, like, that's it's just so brilliant. The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. If you've never seen it, watch it. Yes, it was shot in Italian, and it's dubbed over, but it's so... The storytelling in every frame. You know, like, there's that Twitter account, every shot is a story, or every shot is a painting.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Pause The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly at any moment. It's a beautiful movie. A recent one that I really like, and you brought up the guy who made it, James Mangold, who made Logan. He also made, I think, one of the... I also think he made the best Western of the last 20 years, and that is 310 to Yuma, the remake, starring Russell Crowe and Christian Bale. And that is a remake of a John Ford, but Glenn Ford movie.
And I think that the sequel, the remake, is so much better. It is
based on an Elmore Leonard short story.
Based on an Elmore Leonard short story.
Also, another great modern show is Yellowstone, something that you, I, and everyone else in the pandemic has been binging.
Yes, yes. You know, sorry, I got to take a drink.
Tea break.
I've been talking a lot here. I'm parched, damn it. Give me a sarsaparilla. Anyways, the thing I like about the Westerns is the idea that it is an unboundless frontier that must be tamed by a person that can only like this special soul can tame it. And, you know, it has a lot of similarities to stories, to superhero tropes and samurai tropes and even Greek mythology, that the idea that there is only this one person that can mold this landscape into what it needs to be. And I really appeals to me. I would say you brought up Dances with Wolves is a really great one. John Wayne's The Searchers is one of the best Westerns ever made. It's about two men searching for a girl that has been kidnapped by Native Americans.
The Wild Bunch is
Sam Peckinpah by Sam Peckinpah.
If you want to know everything that ever inspired the Suicide Squad,
yes,
that's the movie to check
out.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. The Searchers is on HBO Max.
A lot of these movies are actually streaming, either free or for a very cheap rental on Amazon Prime.
But The Searchers is considered to be John Wayne's greatest movie. Another one that I would shout out, and it's one of the first Westerns ever made, it's in black and white. It's called Stagecoach.
Oh, yes.
And
with all those dangerous, dangerous stunts.
Yes, and it's a John Ford movie, and it's the first Western to ever shoot in Monument Valley, which is the classic John Wayne with the pillars of rock and like they look like cylinders. And
because they used to be underwater.
Yeah, and they did a lot of... John Ford did a lot of stuff in that movie because I think that movie's in the 30s. Don't quote me on this.
I mean, that sounds correct,
I think it's like 32 or 33, and it's John Wayne's first movie. And they did a lot of stuff where the Native Americans were chasing the stagecoach that would never be allowed now, and flipping horses and doing stuff. And a lot of people have considered that Stagecoach invented the modern chase or invented the modern action sequence.
1939, so it would have been filmed in 37 or 38.
Okay, yeah, but it's all in black and white. It's a great film. If you want to see I think Stagecoach birthed the Western, or like the Western, the reason why the Western genre happened. I think it's all Stagecoach.
I want to say 1939, great year for movies.
Wizard of Oz. And Gone with the Wind.
His Girl Friday.
Yeah, and, yep.
Yeah, with an asterisk beside all of these of not sensitive by modern standards.
In terms of television, two great Westerns are number one is Deadwood, which is also on HBO. Ian McShane, it's about Deadwood, North Dakota. It also stars Timothy Oliphant. It is just one of the greatest television shows ever created, no doubt, without even being a Western. It's so good. And Deadwood does a really good job of showing you of how tough it actually would have been to live during the 1880s. Godless on Netflix by Scott Franks. Scott Franks, a name you might recognize. He also created The Queen's Gambit. He did Godless before. Godless is really great. Jeff Daniels won the Emmy for Godless, playing this villainous Mormon preacher villain.
I thought you were going to say Lonesome Dove.
I was getting to it. Actually, I was waiting for books. That's where I was going to say Lonesome Dove.
We can do books.
Because that's the only book I'm going to recommend is anything by Larry McMurtry. Lonesome Dove, I think, is one of the greatest books ever written, and that is the Larry McMurtry famous about two ex-Texas Rangers driving their cattle from Texas to this new piece of land in Montana. And it is heartbreaking. It is astounding. And they filmed it as a CBS television miniseries. You can find it on a DVD. You can find it on Amazon Prime. And it stars Tommy Lee Jones and Robert Duvall and a murderer's row of a cast. Angelica Houston's in it. Danny, the guy from Lethal Weapon, Danny, help me out. He's Danny Glover.
I've never seen Lethal Weapon, and I don't know who's in it.
He's in it. It's an astounding film. It's one of the best Westerns ever
Donald
made.
Donald Glover's
well.
Uncle?
Yeah, I've kind of talked a lot about Western. I'm kind of losing my voice here, so I'm gonna.
For books, I just want to echo anything by Cormac McCarthy. He has an unofficial Western trilogy. It is. It begins with All the Pretty Horses, Cities of the Plain, and then I can't remember the third one. Then Blood Meridian, if you really like gruesome stuff.
Well, actually, I want to ask you this question because I feel like this has just been like, check this out, check this out, check this out.
Mm-hmm.
I want to ask you, what do you like about the Western genre? Like, what do you think the Western genre does really well? Do you like telling, like, do you think we should tell more stories in the Western genre? Like, what are your general thoughts on that and stuff like that?
So all things with Westerns, and there's a lot of genres like this, kind of come with this asterisk for me of like, okay, but colonizing is bad. You know, and we're sort of like celebrating a decimation of people and culture.
Well, that's not every Western.
No, but I just want to acknowledge that, yes. Like, that is something that we understand, but you can also tell a great story within those boundaries.
And those Westerns where it's like, Indian bad, town folk good, it definitely exists.
Yes.
And you can tell those pretty quickly, but I will say that all of the ones I've recommended so far are not those.
I just didn't want this whole podcast to go by and us not to acknowledge that.
Yes.
That's all.
I would say, I understand that, I would say that there are more Westerns that don't do that than ones that do.
Yes. I mean, for a long time, I would have said Pocahontas.
Yes.
Because I loved that movie because I was 5 when I first saw it. But that movie,
although by our rules, takes place on the East Coast, not a Western.
True, has diminishing returns. Real colonizer vibes in that one.
Yeah,
great songs though. I'll give them that. With the exception of Savages, it's got a lot of great songs.
Some amazing songs. Yeah.
So what I like about the Western genre is kind of what you pointed out, is the idea of the indomitable human spirit. Because
yes.
A lot of classic Westerns do follow a classic hero's journey archetype. And I think that that is, I think that that's valuable. And I think that that's something that you can't tell as successfully in a contemporary setting. What I also like about it more is something that's kind of meta and just for me, so I don't really know how universal it is, but Westerns help me understand America and Americans. And
I want to dive into that a little bit more.
And like my identity struggles in merging myself into the idea of being American. And there are things that aren't Westerns that help me understand that in the same way, but Westerns do that very well.
So yeah, okay. What are some of these aspects of understanding that you've gotten from watching the Western or reading the Western genre of Americans? I'm very curious about this.
So it's hard sometimes when you're not born in America, not to look at Americans as
all cowboys.
A country of, no, that's what my grandfather thought.
Your grandfather did think I was a cowboy. That's very funny.
And to be fair, a lot of tourists, I think, expect they think it's still the Wild West here.
They do think there are Native American teepees all over the place and that there should be wild buffalo.
Yeah, I mean, there should be wild buffalo.
There should
be wild
buffalo.
I will co-sign that. Please donate to the Yellowstone Buffalo Herd.
Mm-hmm.
They're very nice people. The only wild buffalo herd left in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard not to look at Americans as a country of people who are just like, fuck you, we do what we want.
Yeehaw!
And Americans are that.
We are,
however,
yes.
That's a very, like, two sides of a coin, right? Or like a double-edged sword, because the really admirable thing about that is that Americans and America as a country will just put your head down and get it done and
yes.
achieve what you set out to achieve. And that is the same ethos that allowed, you know, this country to be colonized and the country as it is today to spring up as it is. And
for us to go to the moon.
And gain as much power as it did for such a short legacy as a nation. You know, there's a lot of really admirable things about it. It's what the American dream used to be about before it was about becoming corporatocracy.
Before it became about money, money, money.
Yeah. So like there is a lot of things to be admired in that like grit and things like that. And it's sort of the spirit of that I think inhabits the idea of America. And I know like that's a really hard, that's like an ephemeral thing. And it's why it's something that I'm still like I'll probably be working on for the rest of my life. When I've lived more time here than anywhere else.
As you should.
Or anything, because identity is complicated and it's changing, and that's what's beautiful about being a human. But like Westerns laud all of those qualities.
Yes.
And they present them in a way where you are cheering for them, you know, for your narrative hero. And so that helps me sometimes to understand that, like, oh, the people who were brave enough or arguably stupid enough the West are the people that made this country, are the people who survived.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if I answered your question at all.
No, you did. Like, that is the idea. Like, is it because let me ask you this question. Would you say, in a general sort of country sense, I'm not like actually individual that you think Americans are more gung-ho than Canadians?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. I would say Canadians, speaking in
very broad strokes, yes,
are a more reserved, polite people than Americans. Yes.
Yeah, because Americans are more the like, let's get it done.
Yes, and that extends, in both cases, there are positive and negative aspects to
both.
There are,
yes.
And I definitely want to acknowledge that, as there are with every country every way of doing
things. America was one of the first countries to be like, hey, let's put three men on top of a lot of diesel fuel, light it on fire, and shoot it at the sky.
Yeah, Yeah.
We probably need to think about this more. Nope.
No, they'll be fine.
Light that rocket.
You'll be fine. But I do want to say that, you know, we did a whole episode on immigration, and I complain about a lot of the process. But I will say that it has also been my great privilege to get to live in two different countries and become a part of two different cultures. And that's been a very interesting way to live my life as well, and I'm very grateful for it as well.
Well, I will say on that very lovely note that is also, a lot of people think that the message of a Western is bang bang shoot 'em up, yeehaw. That's not.
No, you're always rewarded for working with your community, looking after your own, and being in touch with the earth.
If you look at most Westerns,
mm-hmm.
the theme of most Westerns is assimilation.
Yes.
And it's varying forms. It's either you have to either assimilate on the land that you are settling on, you have to assimilate with the Native Americans whose land you have invaded.
Who very generously look after you, yep. Kevin Costner.
Or you have to assimilate as part of this small town community,
yes,
and you cannot be the loner anymore.
Usually because there's a babe of a school marm who's
yes.
going to be your reward
now,
at the end of the movie.
I know there are Westerns, like The Good and the Bad and the Ugly does not follow assimilation.
No.
But, you know, most classic hero Westerns are about that. So I think it's a great statement that you're like, oh, you know, this culture I'm trying to assimilate, and that's the theme of Westerns. And I think that's a great place to end this podcast. I hope people think this was fascinating. I talked a lot about cowboys.
That's okay, but before we end, we got to talk about what we're reading.
That's right. You got to start off, Ashley, because I got to go to my note.
That's totally fine. You're driving.
Yep.
So I have been reading, in the long line of DC Kids books, I am just getting around to the sequel to Raven, which I believe I've recommended on a past episode, because it's really, really good.
It's called Ravens?
It's called Raven.
Oh, they missed that. They missed that.
I did read Ravens, though. That was a prose book.
Oh, was it?
Yeah. But Raven,
I was like, that's the perfect sequel.
Raven like the Teen Titan.
Yes.
So I just read the sequel to that, which is called Beast Boy, by Cami Garcia, and with art by Gabriel Piccolo. And it is so sweet and so funny, and I love their love story so much. And we say it a lot, but man, DC Kids is fucking crushing it. And if you like any version of the Teen Titans, I can't recommend Cami and Gabriel's work enough. Gabriel Piccolo became really famous online when he was drawing those casual Teen Titans, and DC very smartly snapped
Archie Teen Titans, I like call them.
Yeah. And was like, why don't you guys make a book? And Beast Boy is definitely not a sophomore slump. I'm hoping that each book introduces a new Titan in the Friends group.
Are they going to do another one? Do you know?
I don't know.
Okay.
I'm hoping the next one is either Beast Boy and Raven or Robin. That's my hope. But whatever it is that they will be doing together, I'm very, very excited for. And 10 out of 10, definitely recommend Teen Titans, Beast Boy. Jason?
I recently got the Superman The Man of Steel Volume 2 hardcover by John Byrne. It's really great.
They collected these in trades all the way back, and they were going to collect these in a giant omnibus, but instead they've started putting them together in, like, I think 20-issue chunks, but they have a hardcover. They have amazing, and they collect Superman, Action Comics, and also if the John Byrne Superman appeared in any other books, they put those issues in there, and they put them in chronological order. It is fantastic. The John Byrne Superman period is, like, my second favorite period of Superman next to the Dan Jurgens period. So if you want to look at, I would definitely, there's a volume one as well. But I'm just reading volume two right now.
I'll link to both of them in the show notes.
But they are great. They only cost $40 per, and they have such an amazing design that the spines look so great on the shelf next to it. They're really, really, it's just really nice to have basically the first reboot of Superman in such a nice collection. It's so great to read these stories of, like, you know, it's Clark Kent dating Cat Grant.
Mm-hmm.
Because that was when Cat Grant was introduced, and Cat Grant thinks that Clark Kent is a catch, and Lois thinks that Clark is a doofus. So he dates Cat Grant, and you're like, yeah, dude.
We talked about that a lot in our Cat Grant episode.
Yeah, we did.
Way, way back.
And it's really good. And it's
Cat's right though. Clark is a babe.
Yes, and it's a lot of, like, I don't know. There's just something about, like, I have a lot of love for the John Byrne Superman, because the John Byrne Superman is just, like, where it's the first time for me that Superman wore his heart on his sleeve, and that's Superman to me.
There you go.
So, yeah.
That's a great choice.
Yeah.
Okay. You gonna end?
Or are we just gonna suddenly end it?
That's usually how it goes.
Wah, 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 wah. You know, for a lot of those Ennio Morricone songs, they would just have people sing lyrics, and then they would just filter them and distort them.
You're so full of shit.
No, I'm 100% serious.
Oh, really?
Yeah. If you go listen, like, all those songs have choruses. They have people that are choruses. Now that the wah, wah was actually an instrument.
Yeah.
But some of those songs and some of the music pieces you'll listen to for the Man with No Name trilogy, the Ennio Morricone songs, they will just have people sing the things, and they'll just distort the hell out of them. So you'll hear weird voices of people being like, hum, ba-da-hum, hum, ba-da-hum, hum. I'm not kidding. There is actually a track on The Good and the Bad and the Ugly where you can hear that he must have gotten, like, a chorus of, like, 10 men and was just like, hum, ba-da-hum, hum, ba-da-hum, hum, ba-da-hum. And they're just doing that for, like, 2 minutes. They play it over, like, a horse chase, and you're just like, this is kind of, like, eerie and yet kind of amazing.
Did he also write Here's to You?
Yes, he did.
Yeah, that's a great song.
I actually think it's Ennio Morricone's best work is Here's to You.
Wow.
I do. I've said that before. I think it's the greatest thing he ever wrote. Yeah.
Well.
Yep. With Joan Baez.
Yeah, that's true.
I could be wrong. He got nominated for the Oscar for that.
I know he definitely got nominated. Don't know if he won.
He might have won. I don't know. He got nominated for that one. But yeah, there you go.
There you go.
Hum da dum, hum da dum, hum da dum, hum da dum. I'm Jason.
Bonanza. I'm Ashley.
You want to do a Bonanza? You want to do a Bonanza?
You didn't recommend Bonanza. Is your favorite Western podcast Bananas for Bonanza?
Hell yeah, it is.
Or is it, what's the Martian Western with that guy from The Good Place?
I don't know what you're talking about.
So there's a guy in The Good Place, and he's, like, a real dick, and he lives in hell. And he did a voice of, like, a Martian, like, cowboy guy.
You're talking about Sparks, Nevada?
Yeah.
I don't remember the name, but I know, like, several listeners now are just screaming it at you.
Because
he also hosted, you're talking about the Thrilling Adventure Hour.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, and Sparks, Nevada was one of the characters on it.
I don't know. He's a Martian alien. I wasn't wrong.
I like Sparks.
Space Mafia.
He wasn't Martian. His partner was.
Whatever.
You know, he was a human that this came to Mars.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, but, like, Mars is like the Wild West.
Sure.
And then he sort of had a Tonto that was played by a native Martian.
Mm, we don't love that.
Well, but no, but see, the thing about it is that they made fun of the Tonto tropes. Like, the fact that one of the jokes is that, I can't remember the name of the character, but, like, the native Martian who was his deputy is, like, he's smarter than Sparks Nevada, but Sparks Nevada would still treat him as if he was Tonto.
Mm.
And, like, many of the Sparks Nevada adventures, the Tonto would basically save him.
I see.
And so it was, like, the idea, they really did make fun of colonialism pretty good.
Okay, this has gone on for a long time.
It has.
this is like the longest Jason and Ashley's in a long time.
It is. It is, and there's nothing wrong with that. But that's it. Goodbye.
Bye.
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 See ya.